recorded live.
Welcome to Roz's Healing Community Talk Show. Our goal is to provide tips and tricks to live with joy, even in the face of adversity, and to accept each day as a miraculous gift. The art of healing is living in the present moment and paying attention to mind, body, and soul. This evening, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome Heidi Most, an acupuncturist in Howard County, Maryland. She graduated from the Thai Sophia Institute when they were located in Columbia, Maryland. She is a core faculty member at the Institute, teaching theory and point location classes, and maintains an active private practice of acupuncture and essential oils. She also practices and teaches Qigong, a Chinese meditative movement. She has continued her postgraduate studies with Jeffrey Yun, an 88th generation Taoist priest and Chinese medical practitioner based in New York City. Heidi left a 25-year career as an urban planner and hasn't looked back. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you, Roz. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, tell us, Heidi, tell us, what is acupuncture? So many people, you know, say, oh, my God, how do you deal with all those needles, and what does it really do? So this evening, we are going to enlighten all those wonderful listeners out there.
All right. So just a very general definition of what acupuncture is. It's a healing art which originated in China well over 3,000 years ago. We don't really know the exact date. It was a system of medicine used in China for many centuries and is still used as an adjunct to Western medicine in modern Chinese hospitals. The Chinese believe that acupuncture, herbs, and a certain types of meditation were essential components to maintaining health. And that was their system of medicine for many, many centuries.
So how does that really work? I mean, it is so different than our Western medical culture. How does this really work with the body?
And it is so different from our system, which is why it's good to really judge it on its own terms and not try to translate it into Western medical terms. So the system is based on harmonizing and balancing qi. And what qi is best translated as vital energy or life force. And qi courses through the body in channels or meridians, similar to the way a river moves. When the qi is full and flowing, life is peaceful and joyful, and we are strong and healthy. And when the qi is not flowing smoothly, just like in a river, if you are at a river and you see lots of rocks stopping up the flow of the river, the river is going to be diverted. And very similarly, if our own qi in our body is blocked, it's not running smoothly, and we get sick. We either get aches and pains, or we get actual diseases. And the way that the qi is regulated in the body is using needles at acupuncture points. And these have been found really by trial and error over the centuries to be points that are very, very effective in regulating the qi in the body. And to answer your other question about doesn't it hurt, the needles that we use are the breadth of a hair. And so they're very, very small needles. And sometimes they hurt, but the hurt is momentary. Because after all, we are touching the vital life force. And so we expect that there will be, or there often is, some type of reaction. You might feel warmth when we put in the needle. You might feel an electrical sensation or a pulling sensation. Or you might feel a little pain. But again, those sensations are generally momentary.
And I have to share with anyone who is listening that I certainly have experienced some of these sensations that Heidi speaks of, since I do receive acupuncture, and I actually feel that it is beneficial in my healing process. But Heidi, a couple of questions come to mind. One is there any evidence that it works? You know, in the Western culture, in order for something to be believed, there has to be evidence-based studies.
Right.
So from the Chinese perspective, tell us what evidence is used to validate the positive effects of acupuncture, please.
Okay. A couple of different ways of answering that. First of all, to answer you it directly, there have been hundreds and hundreds now of studies done that have looked at the efficacy of acupuncture for many specific conditions. The World Health Organization on its website says that acupuncture has been shown to be effective in relieving postoperative pain and nausea and vomiting resulting from chemotherapy, can alleviate anxiety, panic disorders, and insomnia, and has very few side effects. So the World Health Organization is saying that it is very effective for those particular conditions. The Cochrane Review is a nonprofit organization that looks at all of the research done on a particular healthcare intervention. And they explore the evidence for or and against the effectiveness and appropriateness of particular treatments, medication, surgery, education, by reviewing all of the published studies on a particular intervention. So they really are the gold standard when it comes to exploring evidence-based medicine. And according to their reviews of the research, acupuncture has been shown to be effective for chronic mechanical neck disorder, postoperative nausea, idiopathic headaches, chronic low back pain, and acute tennis elbow, among other things. And they've got a number of other reviews going now on studies that have been done on acupuncture. So absolutely, double-blind studies have been done that have shown acupuncture to be effective for a variety of conditions. And I also want to say that in China, we call it the longest-running clinical trial because it's been going on for thousands of years. And for up until very, very recently, the Chinese never did research because it worked. It was their medicine, and it worked. So they weren't that interested in double-blind studies. It's only been in the, maybe 30 years or so that the Chinese have really, really picked up on, in a way, wanting to prove to the world and wanting to prove to themselves that their medicine is evidence-based.
Well, I think that this – yes, go ahead.
Well, the other thing that I did want to mention is that in many of these studies, there has also been shown to be a strong placebo response. And some people – so sometimes while acupuncture has been shown to be effective against a control group, sometimes the studies have shown that the placebo is equally effective. And what most acupuncturists say to that is wonderful. If acupuncture can help strengthen the placebo response, it's a good thing, because anything that helps to alleviate pain and suffering or to alleviate the condition that people are concerned about is a good thing, no matter what you call it.
So it is very significant that the acupuncture studies have actually made their way into Western culture and Western medicine medical journals, so that it actually has won approval for insurance coverage.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true. The insurance companies would not be covering it unless they felt that it was effective. And the other thing about acupuncture is it does not have side effects. You are not going to kill anybody with acupuncture, and you're not going to make them seriously ill with acupuncture. So there are no side effects. So some of the studies say acupuncture is moderately effective at, for instance, alleviating pain of tennis elbow. But compared with, for instance, many Western pain medications, you have to say that acupuncture has no side effects, whereas the Western pain medications do.
And I would say most Western medications, there's always some kind of a side effect. It's a, you know, weighing what is going to be the cost-benefit ratio in terms of what it gets relieved and what you have to pay to get that relief.
That's right. That's right. Not necessarily a monetary cost, but you have to be concerned about what else is going to happen in the body. So that is very true.
I think one thing that impresses me so much about acupuncture is that there are physicians who do allow and do recognize the benefit to help those who are getting chemotherapy, particularly to be able to tolerate that chemotherapy better.
Absolutely.
So that they can benefit from whatever that chemotherapy is going to do.
Absolutely. And as I read previously, with the Cochrane Review and the World Health Organization, acupuncture is recognized at alleviating postoperative pain and the nausea and vomiting that occurs as a side effect of chemotherapy.
Should a patient ask their physician about incorporating acupuncture as part of their treatment, or does a patient just go on their own? What do you recommend?
I think it's a good idea to ask your physician what they think about it. I would say many of my patients they can do both. They'll either ask their physicians, and you'll also have some physicians who are not very supportive of acupuncture. So people will come anyhow. With cancer treatment, I say it is important to ask your physician because you're under a very, very carefully monitored treatment protocol when you are dealing with cancer. And I think it's very important for the physicians that are working with you to know or to really give you permission to try the acupuncture, or at the very least to know what you are doing. And so there are some doctors who don't want herbs to be taken because the herbs can influence the medications that you're getting.
And that's a very important fact. However, I would love to know your opinion about patients who believe in acupuncture and their physician does not. Do you find the patient will come to you and just keep that information from the physician, or get a different physician? Have you had any of that experience?
Yes, I've certainly had patients who felt that, again, this is not with cancer treatment.
Okay.
Or treatment of other very serious diseases. But I absolutely have had patients who have come to me and said, you know, my doctor doesn't believe that acupuncture is good for anything, and I got another doctor. Because it is very important to have a doctor who believes the way you believe. You know, no matter what that is, I think it's important for the patient to be in sync with their healthcare providers so that their healthcare providers can support them in their journey towards health and well-being. So really, no matter what you believe, you should have a physician that is supporting you in your belief.
And I have found that in the medical literature also, the studies will show that an awful lot of patients try to have a physician that is on the same page as they are. However, the medical literature also states very, very bluntly that a very large percentage of patients will go to acupuncture or consider these alternative methods or complementary treatments and don't tell their physicians in fear that their physician would not approve. But yet, at the same time, there is, you know, at least an inventory where people are realizing that complementary methods are being chosen, informed choice by patients to incorporate that treatment. So I think it's imperative that we raise awareness for the validity of acupuncture.
This is a case where the patients can educate their doctors, you know. So if you have patients going to their doctor saying, you know you don't like acupuncture, but it sure makes me feel good, you know, or seems to be really helping me in treating this condition, it's a way of educating the doctors. And I think eventually that will happen. I feel very strongly that there are more and more, there is more and more acceptance of Chinese medicine by the Western medical community because doctors are seeing that their patients are helped by it. And in a way, that's the most important thing.
Absolutely. And that leads to the next question, not just looking at the patient from, you know, the organ that is being afflicted or the pain, wherever it is. Do you address lifestyle issues with your parents, with your patients, looking at the whole person?
You know, absolutely. And in fact, when I start to work with the patient, I want to know what's right with them. You know, I think it was Jon Kabat-Zinn in his book, Full Catastrophe Living, who said, even the sickest person, there's much more that's right with them than that's wrong with them. And so that's where I like to start. What is going well in your life? Because very many times when people are sick, that's all that they can see is their sickness. It is, and they begin to define themselves by their illness, and other people define them by their illness. It's very important for people to see that there's something that exists outside of their illness. And so I try to support that right from the beginning. What's going on in your life that's right with you?
And Heidi, this is so much my philosophy. I mean, actually, I find the Western culture is so focused on the complaint and what's wrong with their life, whether it be through the job, through their relationships, that precipitates lots of illness.
Right.
I mean, we know from quote, evidence-based studies that over 80% of physician visits are stress-related, which is translated into what's going on with your life.
Yes.
And how we focus on it. So, yes, I am so in agreement with you in terms of how we can address our colleagues, our patients, and even just people in our relationships, refocusing things on the positive and what is going right.
Absolutely.
With the life.
You know, I'm a graduate of Thai Sophia Institute, and the president of the institute, whose name is Robert Duggan, says suffering is optional.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably one of the most profound statements that we can ever say to ourselves. Suffering is optional. There is so much that life throws at us. You know, our life, our modern life is filled with stress and, well, potentially stressful situations. Just being caught in traffic and job situations with people who are, you know, maybe bosses that aren't supportive of us, or underlings that don't do their job, or colleagues that don't support you, or in competitive environments, not to mention the pollution that we live with, and the you know, the food that we eat that is not pure, and the water that we drink that is not pure, that we have stresses thrown at us all the time. We have a choice as to how we are going to react, and that's very, very important to
absolutely. So, and I truly believe that our the generations have not really been raised on those thoughts, or even on that approach to life. Because stress is life, and there is some kind of concept that, oh, everything should be hunky-dory, and not knowing how to just accept it and have the ability and the skills to choose how to address it without allowing yourself to be totally disabled.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. So it's important to give people the tools to help them deal with stress. And one of the things that I give to my patients are deep breathing exercises. That breath, it's just such an amazing thing that we have this incredible tool right under our nose, literally, that helps us to deal with stress and to neutralize the stress in our life, and that is conscious deep breathing. It really can change the chemistry of our body, of our blood, and can reduce the stress hormones and chemicals that are released just as we live our lives, as a normal part of living our life.
You know, that's a pretty profound statement to say that the way we breathe actually has the power to change the chemistry of our bodies,
yeah,
and resulting in less anxiety, less tension,
yes,
and less pain, actually.
Yes.
And it seems to me that that is another component of wellness that is so overlooked in its emphasis, in its even in the experience. I don't believe in the health classes that are taught in both high schools and colleges actually reach the student with such emphasis on the actual effects of breathing in with deep breathing. They teach it,
uh-huh,
but there's a piece missing.
And that is so sad, because the research has been out there for decades now.
A long time.
You know, I don't know. There were the relaxation response.
Mm-hmm. Herbert Benson.
Herbert Benson. Wasn't that written in like the 60s or 70s?
Oh, yes. Oh,
you know,
yes.
Quite a while ago. And, you know, that still is so important today. He gives a formula for how to deal with stress, how to elicit the relaxation response instead of the flight or fight response. Which,
right,
as we know, releases all of those stress chemicals. The relaxation response, by deep breathing, you can actually counteract those stress hormones and elicit relaxation. And, you know, from something that was written, 30, 40 years ago, it is still so important today.
And if I can add, it is so simple, this relaxation response, to do.
Totally.
But it is important for people to realize it takes 7 times in a 21-day period for that particular behavior to become part of you.
You know, Sorry.
And knowing about it is one thing, but doing it, practicing it, is another.
You are so correct. And that really is the key to any change. We have to take control of our lives and do it. We actually have to do it every day. And that's why we call it a practice. You know,
exactly.
Our breathing practice, that we practice it every day, and best to do it a few times a day. And Roz, can I be specific about what we're talking about?
Oh, absolutely. Give an example.
So there are many, many different breathing exercises. Dr. Andrew Weil on his website has some great ones. If you just Google on the relaxation response, you'll come up with Dr. Benson's website that goes through his breathing recommendations. But something that I use is actually right off of Dr. Andrew Weil's website. It is an exercise where you breathe in deeply for a count of four, hold it for a count of seven, and release it for a count of eight. So it's that very simple 4-7-8 pattern. And you do this with the tip of your tongue right behind where your upper teeth meet your upper palate. It's like it's part of many different ancient breathing rituals. So they talk about it as connecting an energy pathway. It's also just a way to keep you conscious. So I think that it a lot sort of aware so that you don't wander off as you're counting. So to keep your tongue in that position and breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. You kind of make a whooshing sound as you breathe out. You just have to do that three or four times. So it just takes less than a minute to do. And maybe you do that series of three or four breaths. Maybe you do it twice a day for the first month and see what a difference it makes in your life. And it really will.
If I can add to that, it actually trains your mind that when things get a little bit edgy in a day, you can actually quickly take yourself into that breathing mode, and you will find yourself much calmer, and you'll have much more mental clarity afterwards.
That's absolutely true. And it kind of brings us back to acupuncture. It is allowing you to feel like you have control over your life, and that is very, very important. There is something that you can do for yourself that can really, really affect your body, mind, and spirit. And that is also what acupuncture seeks to do. You know, as acupuncturists, we are taught that we are not doing anything to your body. We are allowing your body's natural processes, natural healthy flow to occur. It's not like we are doing something to you, but rather we are opening the pathways of energy so that your energy can flow more smoothly again. So we want very much to give the power to back to the patient to maintain their own health. And deep breathing does that, and acupuncture makes you more aware of your body. So in that sense, it helps in the process of giving you back your own power.
And that is so very important in terms of our mental philosophy. We all want to be in control.
Yes.
And this is a way of gaining control and still being able to behave in a manner with kindness and positiveness and giving other people a feeling of value.
Yes.
When you are able to achieve this kind of breathing and taking, having your body function in such a way. And this leads me to the question that says, how does this actually help the body, mind, and spirit integrate? Can you talk to that a little bit?
Well, first of all, it's so important to realize that body, mind, and spirit are one. They really did not think of it as separate things in classical Chinese medicine. In other words, when I touch a point, an acupuncture point, it is going to affect your body, your mind, and your spirit. For example, we say that the spleen is very involved in digestion. Even, of course, in Western medicine, it has digestive functions. In Chinese medicine, the spleen and the stomach are they are considered the first place where food comes into our body and is first, the Chinese term is rotted and ripened in our stomach, and then that very first substance is the first stage in the creation of qi and blood. So when I needle a point on the spleen or stomach meridian, it is affecting the digestive process, that's the body part of it, but on a more mental level, it is affecting our mental process of digesting, so that when I get an idea in my head, I want to process it. I want to chew it. I want to chew on it and really kind of make it my own through a mental process of digestion. So that acupuncture point is affecting that mental process also. And on a more spiritual side in Chinese medicine, the spleen and stomach are associated with thoughtfulness. And so that spiritual aspect is also touched when I needle a point. And just as an example of how body, mind, and spirit, I think everybody has had experience of this in their own life, how body, mind, and spirit work together. But just an example, I had a new patient recently who had never had acupuncture before, and I was just marking out the points on his back. I was not even needling them. And he said, "I'm getting very faint." And I said, "Okay, let's lie down." So he lied down, and he collected himself when we finished the treatment. And I said, "What was that? How come you got so faint?" And he said, "You know, when I was 10 years old, I was swarmed by bees, and they stung me. And ever since then, I've had a fear of needles. And so I think just the thought of those acupuncture needles got me very scared again." So this is, just imagine this, an incident that happened 40 years ago, just the thought of that constricted his blood vessels, reduced the amount of blood going to his head, and he got faint. And that to me is a very kind of humorous example of how body, mind, and spirit are so connected together.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so many times people don't, you know, they wonder how come things happened or appeared, and how could they, you know, there's nothing that's separate. So when a book appears that you thought about, and all of a sudden, you know, somebody tells you about it, or you were in a place and it's there, you know, how did that happen? That's because everything is all connected between the spirit, the mind, and the body.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there is no one thing.
Yeah, and isn't it wonderful how those coincidences occur in our life that aren't really coincidences?
Not at all. And, you know, is those people out there, if you can believe this, if you've can see the truth that we believe, you too can improve your health status tremendously, exponentially, if you take a look at yourself as a connected organism through the universe. And acupuncture helps keep our mind, body, and spirit very well connected. So that leads me, Heidi, to ask you that, how is acupuncture actually regulated in the United States?
Every state has its own process for licensing and regulating acupuncturists. Graduation from an accredited school is generally the minimal requirement, and accreditation for all acupuncture schools is given by a national accrediting body. So, first of all, the acupuncture schools have to meet certain national standards. Then, in addition to that, there's a national board exam that most states require that sets a national standard that many people do have to take in order to get a license to practice.
Is the acupuncture that is practiced here in the United States different from that in China?
You know, acupuncture is so much a part of Chinese culture and philosophy. It really grew out of their own culture and philosophy. Every Chinese mother knows points to reduce fever or convulsions or nausea for their children. It was their folk medicine. And having said that, Chinese medicine was systematized after the Communist Revolution to make it more modern. And as part of that systemization, they kind of reduced the importance of that spirit plays in their medicine as it's now practiced. So there are many schools in the United States that teach acupuncture exactly as it is currently taught in China. But there are other schools, Thai Sophia Institute is one of them, that teaches Chinese medicine with much more of its spiritual root and what I would say how it was really written about in the Chinese medical classics.
Well, that is encouraging to hear.
You know, one of the things that I think is so interesting is that the classics that were written in 200 BC are still so important to everyday practice today. And it's like you don't have to forget the roots of this medicine.
Exactly. Exactly. It is
ancient wisdom.
It is ancient wisdom, but and that never, you know, that transcends everything. You know, as we see here in the United States, especially every, you know, couple of years, there's a new trend, especially when it comes to diets. And they don't transcend.
Yes.
And so, you know, people believe certain things, and then all of a sudden they have issues that have resulted because of those trends. But it is important for us to teach people how to embrace ancient wisdom and to apply it in an informed way so that good choices are made. And again, we enhance wellness.
Yeah. You know, one thing I want to mention, Roz, is that in the Chinese classics, they talked about living your life in harmony with nature. And this was the birth of acupuncture and Chinese medicine was looking at nature and how things occur naturally and trying to live in accordance with the seasons. So these the very first chapters in the Wangdi Neijing, which was one of the first classic Chinese medical texts or classics written about acupuncture, they talk about the importance of living in harmony with the seasons. So, for instance, in winter, we are supposed to rest. we're supposed to go to bed early and sleep late and renew our energy so that we're ready to burst out in the spring.
Somehow this never got translated into the American way of living.
Yeah,
think of the whole corporate world and the tension that everyone is under. I, you know, speak a lot to corporations, and the most frequently asked for presentations and training are how to deal with the stress, and you know, it just never changes.
Yeah.
In terms of the demand, the fast pace, the multitasking, they haven't learned the word rest.
Right. You know, and it's funny that in our culture around Christmas time, with all of the parties that happen at the end of the year and Christmas, and, you know, people are out late and staying out late to greet the new year, and it's actually the time when we're supposed to be the quietest. We're supposed to be in our houses, you know, resting and renewing ourselves. And instead, our culture pushes us to be out and out and about and expending a lot of energy. And it's not the wisest thing to do, really, because if we don't renew our energy, we don't have enough to really burst forth in the spring.
You know, what you're saying is so, so important. I can't emphasize it enough, because we have been so cultured that, God forbid, you should just do nothing and sit quietly. And
yeah,
to do this even in your own home as a child, say, growing up, or in a corporate setting, you are looked upon as, you know, you are non-productive, you're really a doofus, and you better get moving and get it together so that we can make more money.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're not going to get good grades if you just sit there looking and being peaceful.
Yeah.
It's really a detriment to our whole society.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then there are people like us who come around, you know, touching other people and spreading our nature of peace and harmony.
Uh-huh. And spreading this ancient wisdom, Roz, you know. That's really what we're doing, is spreading this ancient wisdom. And I do think that it's becoming more and more accepted in this culture. I think that the word is getting out. Look, Oprah, is having acupuncturists on her show and doing that wonderful, wonderful series with The Power of Now.
Yes. And that's a major, major piece in terms of teaching people the power of now. It's very hard for people to learn.
Yeah.
But
well,
it's...
I would say it's very easy to learn. It's not a difficult thing. It just requires you to stop and breathe.
Well, this is true.
You know?
But it's the acceptance, which I find people have difficulty with. I find they have difficulty accepting it, and an awful lot of people need approval of it because they're part of a group, and if the group is not doing, they have difficties.
So
that's why I say it's hard, because you have got, again, to make a conscious decision to do this, and you may have to, you know, let go of some of your social contacts.
Yeah, well, or... what you perceive are your obligations.
Yeah.
You know? And it's really changing your priorities in life, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know? It's like saying, okay, for me to be healthy, I need to build in some downtime in my life. And that's my priority. It doesn't mean that you have to go up a mountain and go into retreat for months on end. You can build meditation into your current life. It doesn't mean that you have to make radical changes. You might choose to, but there are ways to build meditation into your current life.
Oh, most definitely. I certainly am an example that I have done this. I find when I'm teaching this in my stress management presentations, young mothers have a problem because they're either working moms or single moms, and well, there's, you know, they put themselves at the bottom of the list and do not put themselves at the top to take care of themselves. And this is a major problem, I find. Because if you don't take care of yourself, how can you take care of your children or your special, you know, someone's in your life?
Yeah, you absolutely. You have to do that in order to be able to give. You know, there are some people who just want to give and give and give.
But yeah,
but there is a limit if they don't take care of themselves.
Absolutely. I always refer to people to think of themselves as a jar of jelly beans. And when you keep giving the jelly beans away, how do you fill up the jar? And, you know, nobody else is going to do it but you.
Yes.
So, you know, again, that beginning healing level is to educate yourself with this kind of knowledge so that you can then begin to implement them. And, Heidi, in your introduction, you mentioned that you also use essential oils. How did you incorporate that into your practice? What are they?
Essential oils are kind of just that. They are the essential oils in a plant complex chemical mixtures within each plant. They give fragrance to the plant. They're contained in a plant's glands or ducts or resins. Just like a plant can ward off insects from eating it up a plant has certain growth patterns where they reach towards the light, they grow very tall and straight. They're capable of cellular regeneration. They are capable of reproducing. All of these actions are carried out in some way or influenced by these essential oils of the plant. And so by extracting them, we can actually borrow these properties and use them for ourselves. So, like, for instance, on a very simple level, oil of lemon and eucalyptus have been shown to be very effective insecticides. And so you can, instead of using insecticides on your skin that are somewhat like we don't know what DEET really does to us. DEET certainly is an effective insecticide, but we're not quite sure what it does. We know that it eats into plastic, so some people are a little bit unsure about using it on their skin.
Right.
But oil of lemon or eucalyptus is something that you can put on your skin without a negative reaction, and it is a very effective insecticide. And in fact, I had planted collards a week ago, and I noticed that the ants were eating my collards.
Ah.
So I just prepared a mixture of eucalyptus and lemon and put it on my collard greens, and for the past 3 days, the ants haven't touched it.
See that?
So
I mean, what more evidence do you need?
That's right. but I use essential oils not only for topical things. They're wonderful for opening the sinuses, with colds. And they can be very effective in helping building blood, building chi, and regulating the flow of chi. They can be very effective with children or teenagers who are not happy at all about the thought of needles. and I have treated teenagers and children very effectively with essential oils.
That's great. I think that there's not as much known about the essential oils as even acupuncture.
Yes.
You know, there's much more awareness about acupuncture and its benefits than the essential oils. And this is just fascinating to me. And to see that, you know, this should be taught, you know, in our wellness classes so that people become aware and to know that there are also credible practitioners that they can go to, just not, you know, on the web to go get, you know, the cheapest thing you can buy.
Right, right. One thing I want to say about essential oils, it's very important to use only organic oils because they do get absorbed into your skin. So you want to only use organic oils on your skin. If you're putting them on your collard greens, you don't have to use organic oils. but if you're using it on your skin or your patient's skin, I only use organic oils.
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. Heidi, you know that I am a big humor laughter person. How do you perceive the laughter therapy as an important part of the healing process?
Oh my God, it's so important, Rez. As you know, laughter is a wonderful, wonderful stress reliever. And I think, you know, any of us who have worked in an office situation know that the best bosses are ones that use laughter, that can immediately dissipate the tension or anger in a meeting with a joke. Laughter is just a wonderful stress reliever, and by reducing our stress, again, I talked about it before, it is changing the chemistry in our body. When we laugh, we feel good, and our stress is relieved, and we know that when our stress is relieved, the chemicals and hormones in our bodies change.
They do. They work, you know, in a synchronicity type of way, and we just function so much better. Our quality of life is just so much improved.
Yes.
And we can enjoy the moments that we're there.
Absolutely.
And so...
My husband and I watch Seinfeld every night. We've seen every episode of Seinfeld at least 50 times.
But you can't help but enjoy.
We still laugh, and we watch it while we're eating dinner.
Right.
What a wonderful thing to do while you're eating dinner instead of relating stories of the day.
Right, yes, that are negative.
Yeah.
Yes, oh yes, it is. We watch, see, my husband and I do that also, and we hope the people out there to identify what shows or what makes you laugh and just do something with it every day.
Yep.
That is a prescription for healing and to enjoy those, the music or the radio shows or the TV shows, the DVDs, they make you laugh. Don't wait for a special occasion. So that is, you know, how we would like to leave this hour. And Heidi, I want to thank you so very much for giving us such an education and hope people will realize that they have a very, very big choice to be able to go find a practitioner in acupuncture who is qualified, and they can reach you at HeidiMost.com and to know that it is a very valid form of treatment. And this is one time when you can say that acupuncture addresses many, many issues, health issues. It's not this thing that will cure everything, but it's something that you can feel safe with.
Yes.
So, Heidi, I want to thank you again for being our guest, and we will put this up on our website, and you'll have an opportunity to put it on yours. And people can learn an awful lot when they feel like wanting to know about acupuncture.
Roz, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak with you and all of your audience. Thank you very much.
Well, we welcome all of you, and if you have questions, please, you know, ask us. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.